Sure. No, I can. All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming back from the break and joining us for the next part of the session. I think Denise may have mentioned this earlier, but the majority of our agenda for the day was set based on feedback that we got from the states when we polled states to say what are the most important issues that you'd want to talk about with each other and over the course of our time together. And one of the things that has come up many times as we've talked to the states is the notion that we've got to move the APCD data into information and then information that's usable to the consumer. And how do we do that? And what do consumers need? And how are we going to effectively communicate with the consumer audience to make these data useful and actionable for the activities that consumers need to take on around their healthcare decision making. So we are very fortunate today to have Jennifer Stevens from the American Institutes of Research bring forward some of her experience and her research around consumer engagement, and hopefully this meets a big need. One of the things that we've heard, particularly from states that are working on using their APCD for their rate review and cycle 3 and cycle 4 grants from CMS, is this really important need for price transparency information and really with a consumer focus. So please join me in welcoming Jennifer Stevens.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to present today because when it comes to consumers, right, and if you can focus on getting it right for consumers, you're getting it right for a lot of people. Because I might be really, 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 really smart and technically savvy, but that doesn't mean I understand everything when it comes to healthcare. And so if I always encourage folks like yourselves to first focus on getting it right for consumers, because if you get it right for consumers, there are many other stakeholders that will be able to use and understand the information that you're presenting. Now, the other thing is what you're going to hear from me today, and in the last decade of doing this research and the 25 years of experience AIR has in doing this, is that I can't just show you, like, okay, this is the answer. If you just do it this way, it's perfect. But what I am going to be able to share with you today are a number of different strategies that will make your displays and public reporting of information more effective. So one of the first questions you might be asking is, who is American Institutes for Research? What a great name, AIR. We are not full of hot air, it is always AIR, okay? We are an independent not-for-profit organization. We're based out of Washington, D.C., which is where I am, but we have offices all across the country, including in Chapel Hill, Atlanta, New York, San Mateo, California. I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple of others, but you'll forgive me. One of the things that we focus on, besides health, is that, you know, we do have a lot of other behavioral and social sciences research, and we do deliver technical assistance both domestically and internationally. The American Institutes for Research is a nonprofit and very mission-driven, and so as part of our work on public reporting, AIR internally funded the Center for Patient and Consumer Engagement, and you can see the website up there. The reason they funded this is we want to help achieve the triple aim. We know the cornerstone of which is patient satisfaction and engagement. So this is an important resource that I am mentioning because it's not just AIR putting information out there. We do invite others to come in and present information and invite you to go there for a number of different resources that are available on engagement. So I mentioned this briefly, but AIR does have a great deal of experience in public reporting. In fact, we had the first usability lab in the country, and admittedly it was for education surveys and other materials testing, but it brought us the skills to be able to apply it to healthcare. Our staff have more than 25 years of experience, particularly our Vice President, Kristen Carmen, and most recently Shoshana Sofer, who joined AIR. We do a number of different projects and work on consumer processing and survey and measure development. You may be familiar with some of our work to develop CAP surveys, whether it be the health plan or home health, or if it's cancer or surgical CAPs. We are also currently the organization that's working on the health insurance marketplace consumer engagement surveys for marketplaces and also for qualified health plans. And we've done work on patient-reported outcomes measures for things like sickle cell disease. We develop a number of materials, language, and guides around employee engagement and consumer engagement. For example, like our employee health toolkit that we partnered with the National Business Group on Health with. Okay, let's get to what you're really here for. Tell me how to display stuff well, right? And I probably don't have to sell you on why good reporting matters to consumers, but just briefly, if you can report to consumers in a way that's effective, it will encourage both consumers and providers to take the actions we want them to. They're gonna try to achieve better care and ultimately better health. But the thing is, a good display really has to make sure that it's accessible. And if it's accessible, then you want to make sure that people can interpret it. If they can interpret it, you're well on your way, but making sure that they're understanding what it means for them. And these are the necessary steps in order to get consumers to use your information. So ultimately, you can achieve the bigger picture, right? You can make sure that consumers are visiting your websites or your reports and making use of them, ultimately leading to that engaged patient who's using it to get better health. So all payer claims databases, both great and terrible challenge for you. You really have your work cut out for you because when it comes to building good displays for consumers, it's great. Right? You have a ton of information that consumers want. And that's great because there's transparency that there's a big push for, and you're able to offer that. There's the terrible side of it, in that there's so much information that the all payer claims databases offer, and that it's hard to figure out what exactly and how exactly to present it to consumers. And so that's the challenge that I know many of you are facing that you have to really think carefully about. It's really exactly what is it that I present to consumers, and then how do I do it in a way that's going to be useful to them. There are four key strategies that I'm going to walk through today. And after each strategy, I'm going to pause and see if there are questions so that we can address them just in time as opposed to waiting to the end. Many of these probably sound familiar because they're all of the things I just said a good display will do, right? So the first one is all about helping users focus on what they care about most and what they identify as quality. The most important topics that we find from consumers, whether we're sitting and doing individual interviews or we're conducting focus groups with consumers across the country, we hear about these four main categories: cost, coverage, quality, and location. In terms of cost, when it comes down to it, it's out-of-pocket cost. It's great that, you know, my insurance company is paying thousands upon thousands of dollars, or my company is paying it, but really, what's coming out of my pocket? What am I seeing out of my paycheck? What do I have to pull out of my wallet in terms of services? So for health plans, it's gonna be your premiums and your deductibles. They really wanna know about their co-pays. When it comes to actual care, they're gonna wanna know again about, when I go to the doctor, exactly how much am I paying? What's my deductible? What is my copay? What's not included that I have to pay for straight up? Now, the other thing is that there is prescription cost in there as well. But you're only gonna hear about prescription costs for folks who have prescription costs. But again, I don't wanna, what's included, what's not included, and then what's gonna just cost me extra? You know, there's this idea like, if I pick this drug or if I go to this doctor, I pay this amount, but I can go somewhere else. I wanna know what's the additional cost to me. The other thing that they wanna know is what's excluded. I cannot go here, I cannot do this, I cannot take that. In terms of quality, there's a number of different aspects around quality that we're really excited that consumers want to see. In particular, I know this is gonna hurt, they really wanna see physician level attribution, right? Individual physician data. And I know that there's work still to be done there and it is a work in progress, but it's one, let's pat ourselves on the back for working towards that. And two, remember that this is something that consumers want. And so we wanna continue to work to achieve that goal in terms of transparency. They also wanna see very specific information on their conditions. So if I have diabetes or heart care, I wanna see information on patients like me. So as much as possible, if we can give them information but that's individual, physician-specific, or condition-specific, as opposed to hospital or medical group or clinic-specific, there's going to be a greater engagement and use of this data. Customer service is an easy one for consumers to understand because it's something that's observable to them and something that they themselves can rate. And so customer service, whether it's both helpful and timely, is important quality information that they would like to see reported on. In terms of access to care and services, they're looking for information that's already being reported, which is great. And some of the reporting systems that are out there are reporting whether or not there's access to timely appointments. When I call the doctor, can I get in to see the doctor? The access to preferred doctors and preferred pharmacies and preferred specialists. I have this doctor, can I go back and see her? They're also looking for access to mental health services, and I have to say that the interest in that level of access is actually relatively new and exciting to see. They're also looking for access to language and cultural needs. And this was true even for people that we've talked to who don't, they themselves have cultural or language needs. They want to make sure, though, that it's an offering that plans or doctor's office and providers have. And finally, this one is not always reported in terms of quality reports, but it is often on health plan reports, and whether or not there's appointments available with in-network doctors. So it's great if there's appointments available at this doctor and that doctor, but if they're not in my network, it's not very helpful. Other quality topics include prevention and management of health issues. That goes back to condition-specific information, right? They want to make sure they can access the care that they need to stay healthy, whether it's resources or a nurse's line or something of that sort. That's information that they want to know. They also want to know if they can get care for any of their chronic conditions or mental health services. Finally, in terms of quality, they're looking for information on reputation. And in terms of reputation, you know, we typically think of that as consumers saying, oh, I know someone who went through this plan or went to this doctor and it was great. But in terms of measurement, they would be interested in seeing measures that health plans have available, particularly longevity in the market, the number of patients that retain coverage with that health plan from year to year, and the number of doctors that retain coverage from year to year, which again is something that many health plans are already measuring. Now, the last thing is the location of services. So, of course, patients want to know, is there anyone good near me? Do I have to travel really, really far to get good care? Now the bad news. There are some things out there in terms of quality that we really wish consumers wanted to see, but it turns out we haven't quite yet figured out how to explain it to them to make it meaningful and useful to them. And some of those quality topics include things like coordination of care across providers, pay for performance measures. Consumers will report to us that they're not understanding what they're getting out of that information. It just seems like the doctors in the hospitals are benefiting from that. Information on treatment decision support that plans and doctors offer. Again, this is things that we know as professionals is actually quite useful to understand about the quality of care that's provided, but not yet for consumers. And finally, the overuse of tests and procedures. We know that resource use is important in towards reducing cost overall, but explaining that in a way to consumers just yet is something where we're still forging ahead and doing research on. I want to pause here and see if there are any questions about helping users focus on what they care about, particularly the topics that are important to consumers.
Hi. So you mentioned that consumers are only worried about the cost to them, but I'm wondering, first of all, how recent this information is and whether you're noticing a trend at all as more and more consumers are on high deductible plans or in plan designs that have co-insurance rather than
So, great question. I am really lucky in that I get to do research on this nonstop. And most recently, we did data collection, a set of 16 interviews funded by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality at the end of September. Before that, we had done a series of focus groups on participants who were eligible to participate in the health insurance marketplaces to discuss with them what's important in terms of cost. And those were conducted in the beginning of May. So that's the most recent information that some of this is drawing off of, as well as research that's been published widely in peer-reviewed journals. The other question that you asked me is, gosh, have you seen a shift in what's of interest to folks? And it's true. The folks that are most interested in cost information are going to be consumers that have skin in the game. So those are your consumers that are paying out of pocket. Those are going to be your consumers who are on high deductible health plans, or those are going to be your consumers that use a great deal of services and thus have a great deal of cost.
So there was a report that a study issued by West Health, which sort of looked at information consumers want, and said that they, you know, just like you, they said out of pocket, but also real time. They say, you know, how much more, you know, what's this, as though we would have to know the status of their deductible to know if they still had more to pay. And what West Health concluded, I just, was that the only the carrier can provide this real time personal price information that a consumer wants. And whatever I could do after the fact with my data without knowing him lags a very, very distant third or something compared to that.
That's absolutely true. Thank you so much for sharing that. Consumers really want to know exactly what is the cost to me, not what was the cost to other people like me or people who might have similar coverage. And you're right, only health plans can provide that. And that does not mean, however, that others providing this information should stop by any means, because in our testing that we did at the end of September, what we started is we presented only Medicare data to consumers. And none of the consumers that we talked, no, I lied, one of the consumers that we talked with had Medicare. And everyone else said, gosh, no, I get that this isn't for me, but it gives me a sense of the information. It gives me a sense of the cost variation in the hospitals that I might go to. And so even if you don't have information that is a specific estimate for the consumer, they get an idea of what that is. And we have to remember that our transparency reports are not the end-all and be-all of consumer research. It's really potentially a starting point or a point along a journey. And what we hear in that next step of the journey is that I will call my employer or I'll call my health plan directly to understand what the exact cost to me is.
Hi, you mentioned that a new finding you're seeing is interest in access to mental health services. Can you comment on why you think that might be and what in particular that information would be helpful about
sure.
access to mental health services?
I can comment, but it might not be helpful because it wasn't the focus of our research. I can't tell you why that's coming up or popping up. That is an area for more research to be done. I can only comment that it is coming up, and I'm sorry about that. In terms of what it is that they're looking for, it's having access to healthcare providers that provide mental health services, the type of coverage, and how they can access that coverage is what they're looking for. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Policymakers, providers are very concerned about this. There's been a tremendous amount of resources are going into it. Is this something that your research did address?
Yes, absolutely. So patient safety is another one of those areas that is encompassed under quality for us. And I apologize, and you'll hear about why it's so difficult to come up with sort of these summary labels that try to consume everything that's included. But we really tested that in terms of prevention and management of care. So consumers do value patient safety information. One of the unfortunate things is that most of the patient safety information that we have are process of care measures, and consumers are less engaged about knowing that the doctor did X, Y, and Z, and knowing more about outcomes.
But that you mentioned about patients wanting more information about the physicians, and just looking at the outcomes could be misleading because, you know, if you look at doctors that are providing care for really difficult cases, they may have more unfavorable outcomes because they deal with the more challenging cases. And you get some doctors that never, ever have a negative outcome, like a coroner. Nobody ever dies on a coroner. They're already dead when they get there. So, you know, the best doctors never had a death. you're going to get the wrong doctor, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what other things are patients looking for, and what can you see that might be provided?
Well, the good thing is that our consumers are not stupid. They get that. They're looking to make sure that the data has taken into effect risk adjustment rates, essentially. And they, when we see like and ask them questions about, well, why do you think that this hospital or this doctor has a below average rating or why they're so low? They want to know and say, well, could it be because they see patients who are sicker? And so they're asking this question already and looking for that information. And that's why it's really important to highlight and show risk-adjusted information where available. The other question you asked me, if you could repeat it, though, at the end.
What can we do to make more of that information available? I mean, what you mentioned or hesitated that it's hard to do, so I thought maybe you were replying to something else. Why it's hard to make that available?
Well, if I had the answers to that, I would be rich.
Why
it's difficult to provide risk-adjusted information?
They don't need to get it the way they have it, or the information's not available. I wasn't sure what they're...
So I think really to drive home is to say is that patients understand that having the physician-level data that's available is what they want, right? And they understand that there are issues with that data. Making sure that we on our side are doing what we need to present statistically accurate, risk-adjusted information and showing consumers that we've done that. Essentially, you need a trust me slide or a trust me pop-up. And with that, they seem to be satisfied.
Okay.
Great.
So on that note, did you stratify by health literacy coming from a very rural state? Very optimistic to say that the patients understand risk adjustment.
Right.
So did you do any literacy stratification at all?
No, we didn't. When we do recruitment, though, we do try to heavily recruit those with only a high school education so that we're not getting just a ton of master's and PhD level folks. One of the things that I said, though, is we never go out there and say, this data has been risk adjusted, because no one understands that. We do have to use consumer-friendly language to explain to them so that they understand that, you know, we've adjusted or made some changes to this data in order to make it all equal, right? So that you're comparing apples to apples. And when you explain it in consumer-friendly language, they get it and understand it there. Let's go on to our second strategy, reducing the amount of information for users. There are a couple ways to do this, and one of the ones you may most be familiar with are the use of a global measure or a composite or a summary score. There's always going to be a ton of data to report, right? So for example, we know the quality rating system for health plans that's going to be used already has 43 measures for public reporting, right? And gosh, that's a ton of information to look at and comprehend and make a decision based on. And so for that reason, it's especially because as all payer claims databases know, you have a ton of data too. There's going to need to be some work done to make it easy to understand, comprehend, and use. So there's some chunking or grouping of the data that needs to be done, and it may be by topic or it may be by some other means. So one of the things we talk about are composite measures, and composite measures are just a way of combining two or more individual measures into one, but the way that it's done is that they have to be conceptually and statistically related to one another. So all of the measures that make up a composite have to be psychometrically tested to be related. Summary scores, which are much more common, does the same thing. It combines multiple measures into one. The difference is that there is no psychometric analysis done to make sure that the measures are all related. Instead, the summary scores are created by trying to capture measures that are common. So it could be, let's capture measures by entity. Let's just report an overall summary score for a hospital, or an overall summary score for a physician group, or an overall summary score for a health plan. Or it could be by a condition, an overall score for treating diabetes care, or an overall score for treating heart care. If available, though, the thing about summary measures is that it just helps you get data out the door really quickly, and it is understood, but it's important to provide drill downs or layer information for consumers, especially to know that there's more information that's gone into this to create this composite or summary or global score. The bad thing is that there's problems with everything, right? And so summary scores and composite measures, I think, as the woman in the back pointed out to me, are sometimes difficult because it can make it so that you just don't understand what's going on. It's just too vague. I can't imagine all that's going into it. And it's really hard to explain to a consumer. There are 10 measures that went into this score and come up with a label that encompasses all of those 10 measures, right? And so there's something to be aware of, and certainly not something that we can always fix, but that's why we talk about layering information, and I'll focus on that in a second. The other thing is that sometimes when you come up with that very general label that's vague, then those general labels become indiscernible from one another, right? And so, for example, in that testing that we did in May, we were looking at health plan data, and we had two measures with labels that were helping members get the care they need and helping members get the right care at the right time. Getting the care you need and getting the right care at the right time. Great, simple, easy to understand labels. They sound like exactly the same thing, and they're not. What we intended them to be labeled was one was related to access to care and the other was related to efficiency of care. And so you can see sometimes where we've made a beautifully understandable label, but we can't tell them apart from one another. So what we do have to do is we have to layer information or do drill downs. Before we do that, I want to just show you how these things help. So here is a sample report that we created. I promise you it's not your data. It's no one's data. We made this display simply for example purposes. So before composites and summary scores were implemented, you can see all of the health plans are listed for bed sores, and you have information on infections due to medical care. But it's hard to figure out, gosh, who's the top person really quickly. Now, you guys are fast, so by the time I finish that sentence, I'm sure you figured it out. But a consumer would look at this and say, that's too hard. I'm going on to something else. And so if you create a composite and you combine those scores together, you can present just one simple score and then be able to show them, like, this is what this score is made up of. I talked about layering information. And layering information, you can see here on the left, what we've done is we have all these green headings. And those are there are those two general ones I talked about in there about getting the care that they need and getting the right care at the right time, right? And those, when you see these seven measures, it's really easy to interpret, understand, see which plan is doing best. But I don't really know what's going into those measures. And so the trust me part of this is that label that has show details. So if you were to click show details, you would go from that general display with summary scores and composites to the very detailed display that shows you the measures that make up that summary score or composite. Great. Before I go on from reducing the amount of information for consumers, I just want to pause here and see if there are any questions about composites or summary scores. Yes?
No, I have a question about, do you weight the different indicators within a summary score? In other words, there might be some individual items that would probably, just with peasant logic, seem to be more compelling than others. So how do you combine those? I mean, you apply that to
Great question. In terms of summary scores, we have to be really careful in terms of doing any weighting or analysis there. With composites, though, that is where you really do want to do some weighting. And what we'll do is we'll do a driver analysis, right? So we'll try to figure out what is it, what measure is driving this overall score. And that way, we'll understand a little bit better about what weighting we may or may not want to apply. Yeah, exactly. It's usually just an average of all the scores that are equally weighted, which in and of itself has some problems, right?
Do you make a distinction between six things in one person and six things in six different?
So in other words, are we accounting for comorbidities and complications?
No. I can have renal failure and she has congestive heart failure and he has an arrhythmia. Or I can have all three. Mm-hmm. If I have all three, are you counting me as three complications or as one patient with a complication? Makes a huge difference in how you combine them.
Absolutely. So it depends on the measure, right? So it depends what the measure is measuring in and of itself. So if we're measuring for a process of care measure that's related to heart arrhythmia, right, we're only counting the patient and how they perform.
I'm counting outcomes, adjusted outcomes.
So can you give me an example of an outcomes measure that you would want to see reported? Like
congestive heart failure developed in the hospital, mm-hmm. arrhythmia developed in the hospital, renal failure developed in the hospital, all three in one patient developed in the hospital.
Absolutely. It's by patient then. For your outcomes measure that's measuring a specific outcome, it's per patient.
But I'm not measuring a specific outcome, I'm measuring all three. I'm measuring patient complications.
There's a difference between measuring inpatient complications and outcomes, right? So if
inpatient complications are an outcome. Well, let's continue later.
I'd love to talk to you afterwards more about the topic. That would be fantastic. I didn't get your name, so do be sure to come up with me. Thanks, Michael. Oh, Michael Pine will be presenting on tomorrow, right? as well. And so thank you again for your question. Other questions about reducing the information for users? Yes?
I have one question about attribution. Now, I come from a part of the country where every single health plan has guideline measures for the typical quality measures. And they're all the same, because practically not attributable to the health plan, it's attributable to the delivery system. Yet, many consumers sometimes think that it's actually the health plan that's actually accountable. So how do you deal with the actual reality of who is accountable for a particular measure?
So that's a really tough one, and I'll say that's tough because when we did research on health plan measures, there were some measures where consumers said to us, wait a second, the health plan should have absolutely nothing to do with this. And that's where it's really careful to, in your layering of information and your explanations, to explain exactly what it is that you're measuring and what impact a plan, for example, can have on that. In terms of presenting across different results, whether it's health plan information or doctor information or hospital information, I haven't done any testing where we're presenting all of that together and then asking consumers, well, which one would you attribute this measure to? So I can't answer that question.
Kind of a follow-up to that, is there any variance in trust levels from consumers and where they're getting the information from, whether it's coming from like a governmental entity or a hospital system or a carrier?
Absolutely. Admittedly, I mostly do government contracting, and so we test primarily government-based or state-based sites. What consumers look for is information on the source of the data, and if they see it's from government or they see it's from a nonprofit, there does tend to be greater trust in that information. If they're seeing it's from a health plan themselves, they do begin to question whether or not the health plan is presenting the information for their own benefit. And so they look at the data, take that into account, and then, as I said, it's a journey for them to look at this information and take it to the next step, right? For all payer claims databases, the great thing is that you're not necessarily favorable for one plan or another, and so there is a great deal of trust in information where they understand that it's compiling information across health plans. So you can see in the display here, when we showed that to consumers and noted that there were different health plans being reported, they realized that East Health Plan was not the one that was driving this information. I'm going to go on to the next topic, which is making it easy to see and identify patterns. There are five strategies I'm going to run through. The first is really using a quality framework. So here you can see that what we did is we presented a ton of different healthcare topics: asthma, breast cancer, bronchitis. And that's, as I said, what consumers are interested in, information on conditions specific to them. But if you're searching for information on yourself and there's 100 different conditions, it may be hard to find the right information. And so we promote applying a quality framework. Here, the IOM framework has been applied to report on safe, effective, and patient-focused care. So there's effective information in terms of outcomes, safe in terms of patient safety, and patient experience data finally reported. If you were to go ahead and drill down on each of those under effective, safe, and patient-focused, you would ultimately get the condition-specific information that we showed in the previous screen. The next technique would be rank ordering and tiering. So here you can see what we did is we automatically showed from best to worst. There is a tendency to want to present information alphabetical, but if your goal is to help consumers make effective choices, then you should make it easy for them to find the best choice. The next strategy is providing an illicit point of comparison. So here you can see that there's an average presented for the US and an average for a specific state, in this case, Virginia. These illicit comparisons ultimately offer users information that will give them a basis for evaluating their hospital or in making their choice. It also conveys a message to consumers about what good healthcare typically is. Now here I've shown a state comparison and a national comparison, but your comparison could be regional or it could be something that's a high standard benchmark. So here's the top 10% as a point of comparison. One of the last strategies I want to present is on helping people see and identify patterns by using word icons. Here you can see if I were to try to figure out, gosh, who is the best hospital here, it takes a little bit of time and concentration to figure that out. With the word icons, I can quickly go to the yellow dots in the better, and you can see there's a combination of both direction, color, and words to help people find the information. Now, admittedly, you can note here that we did not sort by rank ordering and tiering, and that is one of the strategies I just promoted, right? And so I just want to point out that each of these strategies that I'm presenting haven't all been combined. There is no end-all, be-all answer here, but these are strategies that you can ultimately use as part of continuous improvement. The last thing that we talk about doing in terms of strategies for helping see and identify patterns is really providing some limitations for users. So helping people look at just a certain number of providers, and that could be a two-step process. First, presenting all of the providers in their area, and then asking them to limit it by perhaps distance. I only want to see providers within 25 miles of me. Or it could be by health plan network, that they accept their insurance. Or it could be by specific ratings or cost. Only show me those providers that are getting a rating of 80% or better, or are getting a rating of better than average. In terms of cost, it could be only show me providers where the cost is X amount or lower. Before I go on to the fourth strategy, I'd like to take questions on making it easy for consumers to see and identify patterns. I can't see them, sorry.
Should be getting discharges, right? I mean, that was the implication. Mm-hmm. So I've actually heard people say that you need to be very explicit with consumers, and I wondered about it, and actually tell consumers why they should care about this information, like call-outs or videos or intro tables. But, you know, I also know consumers are in a hurry, and I'm not sure that they're going to lag there. So I just wanted to get your opinion as to, you know, that information that they're getting sort of under the radar, which mm-hmm. is, okay, this is good, you know, that I should be getting discharged. Oh, when you need the hospital, you should get discharged. Versus, you should care about this because when you get discharged directions, people can get them, blah, 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 blah.
Right. So this is a struggle that we always fight with. How much information do we provide up front to say, you should care about this, here's why, and how much information do we hide later to say, there's this measure I'm presenting to you, and here's why. And for us, we found that, you know, most of this information is presented on websites, and the way people scan websites is, I look for headings, and I look for buttons, and I look for scores, right? And so anything more than that, text that explains the why is this important, is usually skimmed over until they have a problem or a question. And so it's vital that in the explanation in your headings and in your labels that you're providing some of that about why this is important. And it may not be so specific as to say it's important that you get discharge data or discharge data is provided for better outcomes, but rather saying, does things that improve outcomes, right? And then the drill down will explain things that you can do to improve outcomes include providing discharge data. Yes?
Have you looked at elimination costs? For instance, if I go on Expedia and I want to limit my hotels to ones that are under X price, and have saunas, or for me, just looking at that list, you have pain control. Anybody who doesn't have satisfactory pain control, I don't want to look at anything.
Absolutely.
Can you do that click, and then you come up with a selected group, which is much more manageable?
Absolutely. One of the important things in terms of doing filtering is that we want to make sure we get consumers to the data as quickly as possible. So if they say, show me hotels, providers within 25 miles of me, we want to get them that data and then provide filtering options. The more steps we put in between them and the data can create a problem. And there are a number of things that are being done. And for example, I know on Monarch-generated websites for Monarch 5.0 allows a number of filtering options, but still presents the data as you're filtering. And consumers do find that very beneficial because they can see the data and then scope down, right? I saw a question over here.
How, your experience, what ways seem to be the most effective in communicating to consumers the variability in data? So when they're looking at stats, I mean, people probably understand mostly margins of error. When they see survey data on the news, they're always hearing margins of error, plus or minus. A lot of the data we do, of course, are not randomly sampled. Some are closer to the universe, some are not. So what ways have you looked at this, and what ways have you found that are most effective in communicating to consumers how much variability there is, and how well should they rely on one number versus another?
Absolutely. Great question. So one of the things, well, let's use this one. One of the things that we've really found that's important to consumers is they know that there's a difference between 92 and, ooh, I can't read that, 85. And 85, for example, right? But what they don't understand is that 92 and 85 essentially means the same thing, right? And so that's why we promote the use of word icons. The word icons provide you with that grouping that is usually done by confidence intervals or statistical significance in order to show you these are the guys that are doing better, these are the guys that are doing average, and these are the guys that are doing below. We found this is really important because even if you present those bars with confidence intervals in testing we've done with providers, and I'm talking, top tier medical providers. If you ask them, oh, do you understand what the confidence interval means? And then you ask them to explain it to you, they'll be reminded that statistics was a long time ago for them. And so it is important, again, if you can get it right for consumers to show the differences in variability very clearly to them, you can get it right for other stakeholders as well.
My question had to do with the filtering to get to the right car or the right health care worker. Typically, AND logic is what gets incorporated, I think, so it's this AND, this AND, this.
Uh-huh.
It'd be interesting to have OR logic so that you get the distances or the health plans or the right cost.
Mm.
So that you don't miss something potential, even though it's a little further away than you want to go.
Interesting. Haven't done it. Sounds like an exciting research project. I'm going to go on to the last strategy, which is getting feedback and applying it. So getting feedback from your audience is vital. I can stand up here and tout what I think is the best language and I think is the best display, and gosh darn it, every time I've gone to test it with consumers, they've proven me wrong. And so it's important that you find a way to get feedback. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do a study with 100 different consumers and making sure you're surveying everyone in every county. It can be really as simple as putting it in front of board members who are patient-focused and just part of your organization. It can be doing just 3 to 5 interviews with consumers across maybe 1 or 2 rounds of testing. So I'm not saying to you that you need to invest a ton of time or money in this, but you cannot just trust your professional expertise or the fact that when your mom looked at it, she understood it, right? Although, that sometimes works. So there are a number of different ways you can get feedback, which I've listed here, and in the guide on how to get consumer feedback and input to websites, there's a really nice table in there that says, well, here are the pros and cons of each methodology and why you should go one way or the other and what the potential cost and expertise you need to do each of these methods. I know you can't click on this, right? But I promise you there are 2 things. One, the slides will be posted online where you can click on this. And if you're just dying to get on your cell phone or your laptop right now and see it, there are a couple of piles of resource slides with the actual links written out. And there's a pile up here, and there's a pile right outside on the table. Now, before I go on to the resources and additional questions, are there any questions on getting feedback and applying it? Good, that was an easy one. So everyone's going to get feedback here on out. Now, I hope that this presentation was helpful in expressing some of the strategies, but I am not the only resource or only knowledgeable person out there, and so I wanted to direct you to a few resources that are out there. First and foremost, if you are familiar with it, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality offers free desktop software that will help you to generate a healthcare reporting website. And now I know currently 5.0 really focuses on hospitals, but as a member of the team that is working on 6.0, I know that they are also looking at open source information, and we need help to get it right, right? Just as we talked about getting consumer input, we need your input. And so I would encourage you to talk to the Monarch team if you're interested in supporting this work, and to attend the session on Wednesday, October 8th at 3:15. Talking Quality is also another website offered by ARC that has information that could be useful to you on communicating quality information effectively. And then finally, there's a white paper from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that is specific to all payer claims databases that I think is of great value and was just published in January of this year. There are some public reporting resources on the best practices for public reporting. Here, again, another ARC series on public reporting and a report that was developed under Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's Aligning Forces for Quality on exactly how to display this information. It shows you many of the examples I showed today. In terms of getting detailed guidance, there is information on specifically displaying cost and quality information together effectively for consumers. There's a presentation and specific guidelines on how to do it based on consumer research. And there's also some research on presenting missing data clearly. As a sub-bullet there, I wanted to provide information on displays of trend data. Notably, I did not mention display of trend data in terms of consumers because the research in this issue brief shows that we shouldn't display it for consumers just yet, but more for our professional audiences. Our professional audiences can make use of that trend data for quality improvement, but consumers sort of get confused and sometimes make bad choices when presented with that information. In terms of getting feedback, there is the resource that I've already shown you with the guide on different usability methods that can be used. And of course, usability.gov is available as well. I don't want to stand between you and lunch, but I do have 2 minutes, I think, or so for any final questions. Yes?
Well, so I missed it. You just said anything about data security. How much have you assessed that? How much is the public concerned about, is somebody going to find out my personal health information?
So it's not something I heard until recently, and in May when we did those series of focus groups, and we were asking about coordination of care and whether or not a health plan offers an electronic health record, they said to me, wait a second, can my data be hacked? And that was really the first time that that came up in terms of the consumer testing that I've done. And I think that that's becoming more prominent as more and more organizations do get hacked and data released and passwords and all that good stuff. One or two more questions? Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And again, if there are any resources that you're looking for, the exact links are up here or in the table in the back.
Thank you, Jennifer. That was very informative. And having done some public consumer report cards, consumer reports from these large-scale databases are among the hardest challenges that many of you will face. And I, you know, the technical and political challenges are one, but the chronic underfunding to do this sort of work. So, Jennifer, it's huge that these people can take advantage of those resources. So last year, don't leave yet because we had to change our program, and before lunch we're just going to do a few things. We have an announcement and a little acknowledgement. But last year you told us, you folks at the seventh meeting, that you wanted more analytic tools, that you wanted state-to-state benchmarks and measures. And so what we wanted to do was, and is Mia here from ARC?
Yes.
Do you want to come up and just say just a minute of what's happening with the RFTO? Because I wanted to take this opportunity because many of you will be asked for input over the next couple years about something that's happening in ARC.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. It's a great opportunity to be here today. And when I was listening to the state review meetings today in the morning and the session today, I think I can safely say that ARC is on the right path. And I'm just going to quickly talk about the work that Denise was mentioning. We are very fortunate to have good partners, and so ARC is trying to commission some very preliminary feasibility scan kind of work. We are partnering with Denise and Joe Porter here. We have the team from UCSF and Truven, and basically we are just trying to see what work can AHRQ commission under these initiatives of APCD? What kinds of measures can we talk about? Are there robust technical specifications available where states can do within and among state comparisons? And a lot of what I heard today is kind of giving me an idea that we are on the right path here. The environmental scan that we are commissioning is basically going to look at gray literature, published literature. Teams will come and talk to the experts that are here in the room today. So we are going to have a series of technical expert panels. And we are trying to collect all of this information to see what kinds of standardizations of data elements can ARC do. I can't say it's safely there yet, but it's something similar to the ARC's quality indicators programs that AHRQ does. So that's basically what ARC is trying to do, and it fits very squarely in ARC's priorities of improving healthcare affordability, accessibility, and cost transparency. We have new leadership at ARC, and we are very excited to do this work with the state. So thank you.
Thank you, Mia. I wanted you all to meet her, and because over the next 2 years we'll be working with you to do this. And again, you asked and we delivered. I mean, what more can I say? So we have one more lunch program thing to do before we break for lunch. And I would like Dion Khan to come to the podium. You know, we like to give awards. And it's really important to NATO. And as Joe and the rest of the APCD Council team talked about, what are we going to do when Dion retires? And we really need a law to keep these people from, you know, retiring. But short of that, we said, what can we do? And so we, come on up. We thought we would inaugurate the first APCD Pioneer Award and present it to the soon-to-be-retired Dion Kahn.
Not too soon.
And it reads, this is the first annual All-Payer Claims Database Pioneer Award. I'm from Utah, what can I say? Presented to Dion Kahn, Director of Analysis and Data Management, Green Mountain Care Board, for her leadership in establishing one of the first statewide all-payer claims databases in the nation and her commitment to state-to-state sharing and exchange of best practices. She has been a huge resource for many of you in the audience and for us, so we thank her for her work.
Thank you so much. When I kind of heard a little hint about this, I was going to wear one of those bonnets. Pioneer. And then I was thinking, I wonder if I'm getting this award because I'm the oldest person here. I want to just take just a few minutes to do my own tribute to my own pioneers because there's a lot of shoulders that I have leaned on. I'd like to start saying that Kansas and Maryland were the very early pioneers in recognizing the value of claims and encounter data in adding important pieces to the puzzle of healthcare. So they were out there early. The state of Maine preceded us by 5 years in getting their APCD up and running. And they also lent us a great helping hand in the period that we were working to get our legislation and program together. I want to especially recognize Al Prazunka, who used to be at the Maine Health Data Organizations, now with Milliman, for a person I would spend a lot of time on the phone with, and he would come and visit us. And also Sue Ann Singer, who I think does consult with OnPoint on and off, for sharing their vision and technical know-how. They were very generous, and I always said Sue Ann knew at the molecular level what claims were about. And currently I'd like to thank Karen Lee Harris for inviting me to participate in their super user group at the Maine Health Data Organization. Collaboration and networking state to state is extremely valuable. Otherwise, we're all reinventing these shabby wheels. We've also worked with New Hampshire in efforts to harmonize our reporting requirements. We met together, and we had the precedent to the APCD Council, which was called, and you mentioned it, RAFIC. So there's a piece of APCD Trivial Pursuit. It was a regional all-payer health information consortium. It was a mouthful. And I'd like to especially thank, from New Hampshire, Tyler Brannan at the New Hampshire Insurance Department. He's been a continuous and generous font of expertise and information and kind of one of my go-to guys. Back to New Hampshire, the great folks at UNH who have worked hard to support the council, build the APCD use cases, including Joe Porter and Amy Costello, and I have very fond remembrances of Patrick Miller, who was especially committed to bringing the states together with CMS to develop the state agency broad use DUA. I mean, this is nerd material, but you know, I had been dealing with trying to get data for the state on and off for 20 years with CMS, and they had their reasons, concerns about privacy and other issues, and this was revolutionary to get a broad use DUA with identifiers in it for your state's beneficiaries, a huge piece of our business, especially with an aging state, aging in place. Big kudos to NATO, and I know Denise Love, for keeping us all collaborating and moving forward on health data. It's a policy and research tool, and I remember when you were working a lot on hospital discharge data years ago. Last but not least, I'd really like to thank the Green Mountain Care Board, who I work for now. They're committing resources to taking our APCD level to the next APCD program to the next level for data-driven health policy regulation innovation. Thanks to all of you out here who are working so hard. I hope we continue to share knowledge and work together, because if we do that, I might not retire so soon. It's too much fun. Thank you.
All right.
So With that, we are going to keep on a tight timeline, and we won't have a program for lunch. That was our lunch program, so we can network and talk at lunch. And at 1 o'clock, we'd like to start right back in here for best practices and analytics. The afternoon sessions were actually voted on by people, you all, on an online survey. And so we picked the top topics and we'll weave them into the afternoon sessions. So I think we will take a break and have lunch and come back for analytics. Thank you. Blah, blah, blah.
Here, I've got the box.
Hey, good to see you again.
Yeah. Bumping into each other, I think so.